Now, just to let you know, I am absolutely petrified of driving in the snow, so I'm really relaxed now. This is going to be a very relaxing sermon for me, because there's nothing worse than driving over here from Issaquah in the snow. This is fun for me. I'm out of the snow. It's warm in here. I'm happy. So if I do a good job, let me know. I'll find a way to make myself petrified on the drive over every time before my sermon. Now, one of the things I've learned about having two kids is they fight over some really silly things. I mean, it's amazing. Remember one time, Pavel called Hannah a girl. Hannah comes running up to me, "Pavel, call me a girl." And so you're going, "Are you a girl?" She goes, "Yeah." I'm going, "Well, sounds like a compliment. What's the problem?" I've seen fighting over who gets the last bowl of cereal, and there's another bowl of cereal sitting right next to that, to the other box, exact same type, unopened, and they're fighting who gets the last of that other box of cereal. Plenty of cereal. Don't worry about it. It's amazing what kids will fight over sometimes. You know, I think as adults, a lot of times we don't really learn from what we see kids do, because I think God looks down at some of the conflicts and fights that we have with each other and just kind of goes, "Oh man, what are they thinking? What are they arguing about? This is silly." And so my title of my sermon tonight is Seeing Conflicts Through God's Eyes. I'm going to take a look at how jealousy, pride, and selfishness can cause us to find ourselves in conflicts and things we can do about it, particularly by seeing the conflict through God's eyes. To start with tonight, I'm going to talk about jealousy. Have you ever seen two kids fight over a toy? They each get a toy. One got toy A, one got toy B. Basically the identical toy, and yet they're fighting over it, different colors, something like that. Those of you with parents of young children, you probably know about McDonald's Playland, a wonderful place. Send your kids there, they play, you can eat in peace. I love it. It's a great place. You got young kids, you got to know about it. But the problem with McDonald's is the Happy Meal. They come with a 10-cent toy. And invariably, if you get two of them, they're going to have a slightly different toy. And I'm serious, I've seen Pavel and Hannah fight over this 10-cent toy. And I can guarantee you the fate of that toy, within 48 hours, is either going to be laid on the floor and I'm going to pick it up and throw it away, or it's going to be broken and I'm going to pick it up and throw it away. That's it. 48 hours, that toy's gone. And it makes me sad to watch Pavel and Hannah fight over that toy. You know, they're sacrificing their relationship as brother and sister, putting that relationship because of their jealousy, wanting to have what the other one has over a 10-cent toy. And I believe when God looks at some of our conflicts and some of the things that we get jealous about and find ourselves fighting over, He feels the same way. I don't think it's very different, some of our adult fights, from God's perspective. We read James chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. "What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you can fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so you may spend it on your pleasures." I want to take an example of this, how conflicts can happen at work. Let's say, for example, using this passage as an example, you see somebody who has a better house than you. You go, "Boy, I really like that house. I would like to have a house that big or with those features." And you start going, "Well, you know, I can get that house if I got a promotion at work." And you start to look around and realize, yeah, there is a promotion coming up. And so you start trying to get that promotion. And you start doing some things that maybe are not exactly above board, a little bit shady. And the people around you know it. They know what you're doing. They see what's happening. And that can cause conflicts at work. All of a sudden, you're in conflict with the people you work with because you're trying to get this promotion. It all started back with jealousy over a house that you saw that somebody had. Same thing can happen at home. You want to buy a new car, easily a $20,000 purchase. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't make $20,000 purchases very often. Hardly at all. And so it can easily cause conflict with me and Anna, or with you and your spouse, because you're going, "Who's going to get to pick this car?" And you get jealous all of a sudden about, why does one person get to buy this very expensive item and I can't? And so if you allow your jealousy over who's going to make this decision affect you, you can find yourself in conflict at home with your spouse. And as I said, this is, from God's perspective, is not much different from two kids fighting over a Happy Meal toy because they're jealous that one got the red one and the other one got the black one. In both cases, God is sad because he's seeing us sacrifice long-term relationships that we're supposed to have with our friends and families, our brothers and sisters, for something that's short-term and temporal, for things of the earth. I want to also read some passages that talk about jealousy and conflicts that started from them. Acts chapter 5, verses 12 through 18. At the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were taking place among the people, and they were all in one accord in Solomon's portico, but none of the rest dared to associate with them. Although the people held them in high esteem, and all the more believers in the Lord, multitudes of men and women were constantly added to their number, to such an extent that they even carried the sick out into the streets and laid them on carts and pallets, so that when Peter came by, at least his shadow might fall on one of them. Also the people from the cities in the vicinity of Jerusalem were coming together, bringing people who were sick or afflicted with unclean spirits, and they were all being healed. And the high priest rose up, along with his associates, that is the sect of the Sadducees, and they were filled with jealousy. And they laid their hands on the apostles and put them in public jail. Now the apostles here weren't trying to, you know, put down the officials, weren't telling people don't follow the Jewish leaders. They weren't trying to, you know, take down the leadership at all. They were just trying to teach the words of Jesus. There was no need for conflict here with the apostles. The conflict only came because the leaders felt jealous about the apostles and what they were trying to do and tried to get them to stop doing what God told them to do. We also see in Acts chapter 13, 42 through 46. As Paul and Barnabas were going out, the people kept begging that these things might be spoken to them the next Sabbath. Now when the meeting of the synagogue had broken up, many of the Jews and the God-fearing proselytes followed Paul and Barnabas, who, speaking to them, were urging them to continue in the grace of God. The next Sabbath, nearly the whole city assembled to hear the word of the Lord. But when the Jews saw the crowds, they were filled with jealousy and began contradicting the things spoken by Paul and were blaspheming. Paul and Barnabas spoke out boldly and said, "It was necessary that the word of God be spoken to you first, since you repudiate it and judge yourself unworthy of eternal life. Behold, we are turning to the Gentiles." Once again, the main problem here was not so much the teaching of Paul and Barnabas, but the Jewish synagogue leaders were concerned that they were getting more attention. They were jealous of the attention Paul and Barnabas was getting. And so really, I think, once again, this conflict started because of jealousy on the synagogue leaders and the synagogue officials. They were jealous of what they were seeing. There was no need for this conflict to take place at all. Now, one nice thing also about the Bible is when it tells us not to do something, it tells us ways to avoid doing that. I want to talk about one of the ways the Bible tells us to overcome jealousy. Matthew chapter 22, verses 36 through 37 read, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And he said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets." So what we're learning here is the whole law and the prophets, everything is summed up in this commandment of loving each other. Properly understood love, if you understand it and you understand it properly, if you act in that loving way, you'll always be in God's will. And one of the commandments is not to be jealous. And so if we do love this, and we follow this commandment, we will learn not to be jealous. One of the ways I like to think of love is that loving is when you're more concerned about the welfare of somebody else, that they get what they want, that it's more important for them to have what they want than it is for you to have what you want. And if you're doing that, if you're more concerned about other people, you're more concerned that somebody's going to get what they want than you are that you get what you want, your jealousy for that person is going to go away. If you love that person, your jealousy for that or what that person has will go away. Also, if we learn to see conflict through God's eyes, it will also help us overcome our jealousy. You know, there's no way from God's perspective, I believe, that one child of his can be any more loved or any better than another child of his. I love Pavel and Hannah with all my heart. There's no way I could love one of them more than the other. You know, I might be upset with one at a point in time. I might not be happy with one of their behaviors. But my love for them can't be one, I can't, there's no way I could love one more than the other. And I believe that's the same with God and His children. His love for us, no matter who we are or what our abilities are, cannot be more or less than for any one of His other children. So if we are getting our happiness from God, if our happiness comes from making God happy, then we don't need to be jealous of what somebody else has, because if we had it, that's not going to make God any more happy. Because He loves us all the same. The next thing I want to take a look at is pride, and how pride can bring us into conflict. Have you ever seen a kid, you know, argue something that they knew was wrong? There was one time when Hannah was young, she was just learning how to talk, and she called herself a boy, or said he, something of that sort. And of course, Pavel caught right on to that. And he said, "No, you're a girl." And Hannah, I think, recognized right away that she was wrong, but she was not going to admit it. She started arguing that she was a boy. Don't ask me. Gender arguments seem to be a big thing in my family. It's a tough thing. Welcome to my life. But, you know, it makes the parents sad to watch their kid refuse to admit they're wrong and argue something that they know is wrong, simply because their pride is not allowing them to admit they're wrong. They're afraid that, you know, somebody's going to look down on them, or that, you know, if they admit that they make a mistake, they're less of a person somehow. And that's so not true. And I also want to take a look at how this pride can lead to conflicts also. Conflicts almost always start when one person is insisting on getting their own way. Of course, it always takes two people. So once one person is insisting on their own way, one of a couple of things can happen that can start a conflict. A second person can come along and insist on getting their own way. There's a conflict. Or another thing that could happen is somebody can come along and get offended that that person is insisting on getting their own way, and decide that that person should not be getting their own way, and fight back just on the grounds that they don't want this person to get their own way, simply because they think this person is getting their way too much, or insisting on getting their own way. And so a conflict can arise in that case too. And in both cases, I believe the root cause of this is pride. In the case where a person is insisting on getting their own way, they don't realize that they could be wrong. They don't realize that there has been times in their life when they have been absolutely convinced that they were right, but yet they were still wrong. And I think that's true for all of us. We've all had times when we've known that we were right, but yet somehow we ended up being wrong. And so they forget that they've been in that situation, and they forget that that's happened to them in the past. And that's the root cause of that is pride. Also, in the case where somebody is getting offended because somebody else is insisting on getting their own way, and they're saying, you know, I'm just going to fight against this person because I don't think they should get their own way, and I don't think they should that they're acting wrong, the root cause there is pride. Now, I must admit, I fall into the category of the second person quite often. When I see somebody trying to get their own way, I jump right in. I'm going, okay, I'm going to be judge, jury, and executioner here. I know you're doing this for the wrong reason. I know your heart's not in the right place. And I know that the solution is for me to make sure you don't get your own way. And that's pride on my point of view. I am jumping and saying, I'm going to be the judge. I'm going to judge this person's heart, and I'm going to exact punishment from this person. And that's not my place. I'm putting myself in the place of God. And once again, that's just pride. Me stepping up saying, I'm going to do what God should be doing. I want to look at some passages also that talk about how we can overcome pride. Proverbs chapter 8, verses 12 through 13 reads, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and I find knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride and arrogance in the evil way and the perverted mouth I hate. And Proverbs 11:2 reads, when pride comes, then comes dishonor, but with the humble is wisdom. So we're learning from these two passages that the opposite of pride is wisdom. If we are struggling with pride, then we need to get wisdom. And the great thing is the Bible teaches us how to get wisdom. We read in chapter 1, verse 5. But if any of you lacks wisdom, then ask of God, who gives all generously and without reproach, and it will be given to him. So we find ourselves in a situation when we're struggling with pride and we're getting into conflicts. We need to start praying and start asking God to give us wisdom, to help us see things the way He sees things. And if we do start to see things the way He does, we'll start to also be overcome some of our pride and some of the conflicts we find ourselves in because of it. If we're in the situation where we're assisting on getting our own way, we will start to realize that God cares more about our relationships with our brother and sister than over any one particular way of doing something. He's more concerned that we get along and that we have a good relationship than how something happens. We'll also start to remember that there's been times when we've been sure we're right and we've been wrong. And we'll remember that, and we'll be able to recognize that we need to work with other people and we need to compromise. If we're in the situation of the person who tends to get offended because they see somebody trying to get their own way, we need to recognize that we can't judge other people's hearts. We need to step back and we need to judge what they're saying based on what they are saying, not based on our need to try to punish them or try to judge them. We need to repent and evaluate their opinion honestly. In both situations, the people need to recognize that the person they have a conflict with is just as much a child of God as they are. And there's no way God can love either one of them more than the other. I also want to take a look at selfishness and how that can lead to conflicts. Have you ever seen kids hoarding toys? I've seen both Pavel and Hannah play with a toy. Not because they want to play with it anymore. It's abundant that they're tired of the toy. But they don't want their sibling to play with the toy. They are so convinced, they're so selfish about that toy, that they will hurt themselves to keep their brother or sister from playing with the toy. And it makes the parents sad to watch people, once again, fight and have selfishness that's infecting the relationship with their brother or sister. Because that subtracts from their ability to have a good, strong relationship with them. I want to take a look also at how these conflicts can, how selfishness can lead to conflicts in the world. You don't have to look much past the Middle East. There's a lot of reasons for the violence and the problems over there. But in the end, it comes down to people who can't find a way to share the land. They can't agree on laws that will work for everybody. They want what they want, and they're going to fight to get what they want. We see the same problem in the church, where selfishness leads to conflicts. We read in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. Does any one of you, when he has a case against his neighbor, dare go to the law before the unrighteous and not before the saints? Or do you not know that the saints will judge the world? If the world is judged by you, are you not competent to constitute the smallest law courts? Do you not know that we will judge angels? How much more matters of this life? So if you have law courts dealing with matters of this life, do you appoint them as judges who are of no account in the church? I say this to you as saying, is it so that there is not among you one wise man who is able to decide between his brother, and brother goes to law with brother, and that before unbelievers? Actually, then, it is already a defeat for you that you have lawsuits with one another. Why not rather be wronged? Why not rather be defrauded? On the contrary, you yourself wrong and defraud, and you do this even to your brother. Now, I don't know what's sadder here, the fact that they were going to court to fight here in Corinthians, or in Corinth, or the fact that somebody started the dispute because they were selfish about something. There's something they wanted, and they did something to get it, which caused the conflict to begin with. Both are sad. Paul here is saying that we need to put aside any bit of selfishness that we have, and we need to not allow that to get us into conflicts. Selfishness can also cause problems at home. We get very little vacation time in this society, and so when we do get vacation and have free time, we tend to guard that time pretty closely. We don't give it up very easily. And so when we're trying to determine what we're going to do with that time, conflicts can arise with us and our spouse. If we're selfish about that time, we won't be willing to do what our spouse wants to do. They won't be willing to do what we want to do. Because we're selfish about our free time. We lose track of the fact that the free time isn't our time to begin with. All our time is God's. There are also several passages that warn us against selfishness. James chapter 3, verses 13 through 16 read, Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior his deeds in the gentleness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not be arrogant and so lie against the truth. This wisdom is not that which comes down from above, but is earthly, natural, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. This little bit of selfishness will lead to conflict and will lead to all kinds of disorder and evil things. If we have a little bit of selfishness in our heart, we've got to take that seriously. We've got to get it out of our hearts. We also read in Luke chapter 15, verses 15 through 21. Then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no place to store my crops?' Then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. I will say to my soul, Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now, who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasures for himself and is not rich towards God.'" This passage here tells us that our selfishness, all it gets for us, is earthly things. Things that are going to be taken away from us very soon. Things we just can't keep. Also, we need to learn to see the conflicts that come from our selfishness through God's eyes. We need to recognize that the things of the Spirit are more important than the things of the earth. And the great things about the things of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, is they're not limited resources. Anything we want materially is limited. If I get a piece of land, somebody else can't. If somebody gets this, somebody else can't have that. Everything is limited here on this earth and has to be split. But when it comes to the things of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, God can give all he wants to one person. He's not going to go and say, "Okay, you know, I got to take away some of your love and give it to this person because they need some." He can give as much as he wants to anybody, and it's not a limited resource. We also got to recognize that from God's view, any selfishness can lead to disorder and any form of evil. And so we got to take seriously any selfishness in our life. And finally, we got to recognize that from God's perspective, when we do let selfishness interfere with our relationships and cause conflicts, all we're doing is trading things that are permanent, long-term, eternal things for things that are temporary here on this earth. To conclude tonight, I can't think of a better passage in James chapter 4, verses 1 through 7. "What is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and you do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives, so you may spend it on your pleasures. You adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think that Scripture speaks to no purpose? He jealously desires the Spirit which he has made to dwell in us, but he gives greater grace. Therefore it says, 'God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble.' Submit therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Selfishness, jealousy, and pride lead to us trying to get what's best for us. And us wanting to get what's best for us, and selfishness, jealousy, and pride come from our lust for things of this world. And this passage tells us what to do when we're having troubles with lusting after things of this world. And that is to resist the devil, and that he will flee from us. And finally, we got to realize that as we have these conflicts with other people, that from God's eyes, he's just seen two of his children struggling and fighting over things that are not important and not truly strengthening their relationship with each other, and that makes him sad. It's no different from the kids fighting over the Happy Meal toys. And that should in itself shame us into finding ways around our problems. I'll now turn the service over to Don, if he's around, for closing prayer. Okay, I'll bring it with me next time. Oh, is that a phone now? Did you turn on the phone?
Let's turn off the phone.
Yeah.
You're now recording something. Okay, how do you stop?